You're listening to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Nicole Ogrisco, joined by Maine Public's chief political correspondent Steve Missler and State House correspondent Kevin Miller. For the first time in more than a decade, Maine lawmakers are staring down a hole in the state's budget to help fill a $450 million gap. Governor Janet Mills is proposing a few new tax and fee increases. Steve and Kevin combed through the governor's budget proposal and bring us the details of those taxes and fees that will likely be up for debate over the next few months. So, Kevin, who might feel the biggest pinch here from what the governor is proposing if these measures go through?
Yeah, thanks, Nicole. So just to provide a little bit of framing first, you know, state government has been riding along, I'd say, pretty comfortably, financially speaking, for quite some time now because incomes were up and we got all that federal assistance during the pandemic years. Well, that assistance has pretty much dried up. Revenues, tax revenues are leveling off at this point. So, yeah, so we're looking at about a $450 million shortfall over 2 years. What Governor Mills has proposed is what she's calling targeted tax increases. She's not asking for big sales tax increases or changes to the income tax. But you asked about the group that might feel the biggest pinch. It looks like from what the governor's proposed so far, that would be tobacco and cannabis users. Maine cigarette tax has been sitting at $2 a pack for 20 years now. Governor Mills has proposed increasing it to $3 a pack. And then the taxes on other tobacco or nicotine products would go up by a similar percentage. And all told, that would generate almost $80 million. And then she's also proposing to increase the tax on recreational cannabis. And that would go from 10% to 14%. So that's about $6 million. That's the biggest dollar figure impact. But the proposal that would affect the most people or households, I would say, is the one that would apply the state's sales tax to video and audio streaming platforms. And so here we're talking subscriptions to Netflix and YouTube TV or Spotify or Audible, whatever you have. So Mainers would have to pay the 5.5% sales tax on those subscriptions. You know, we're not talking about a lot of money. I did the numbers for Netflix, and the typical Netflix subscriber would pay about 85 cents more a month. But if you have a bunch of subscriptions, like I know we do in my household, it'll add up.
And we should say, Kevin, that these tax and fee proposals won't cover the entire budget gap that the state of Maine is facing, right?
So yeah, that's right. It won't cover the entire gap. Maine will get additional revenue from other sources, but the governor is also proposing to cut other areas of state government. The end result is actually that the state budget would increase $1.1 billion over the current state budget. And that's getting some criticism from Republicans as well.
One helpful way to think about this proposal is that it's really the governor's attempt to protect some big investments that she's made during the course of her two terms. The biggest one, I think, being this 55% of local education costs. That number just keeps going up, and the governor has acknowledged this. So the idea is to try to keep that going.
And obviously, Maine isn't alone here. I mean, Republican and Democratic-controlled states are facing budget gaps as well. But I wonder what you all are hearing about what the governor has proposed for this year.
Yeah, so Maine is definitely in good company. One of the organizations that tracks state spending and finances, Pew Charitable Trusts, they recently released an analysis that shows tax revenues have declined in 40 of the 50 states last year. And some larger states are actually facing shortfalls that are bigger than Maine's annual budget. But as far as what we're hearing, I would say the response from Republicans was as anticipated. They've been accusing Governor Mills and Democrats who control the legislature of spending recklessly for years now, adding new programs and increasing the size of the state government to levels that were much higher than during the years of Republican Governor Paul LePage, who shrank state government. And they've been making clear that, you know, they're just not on board with any tax increases, even small or targeted tax increases, like the governor says. And here's the Republican leader in the Senate, Trey Stewart of Presque Isle, talking about that.
One new budget, five new taxes so far that we are aware of, equals zero Republican votes. Republicans are not going to be supporting any budget that's going to be raising taxes on Maine people. It is not a taxation problem. This is a spending problem.
And as for Democrats, I'd say the response has been, you know, interesting. We're definitely hearing some grumbling from people who are unhappy about some of the cuts that Mills proposed. And there are cuts in this budget, especially to DHHS.
So while state lawmakers kicked off the start of the legislative session in Washington, many of President-elect Donald Trump's nominees faced U.S. senators this week for their initial nomination hearings, including Pete Hegseth. He's Trump's pick to lead the Department of Defense and is facing questions about his experience and his character. Steve, it's not so surprising to hear U.S. Senator Susan Collins's name mixed in the debate about Hegseth's nomination, but what exactly is going on here this week?
Yeah, I think Collins is on the hot seat with a lot of these cabinet nominations because Trump's picks are so unconventional, contentious. I'm actually struggling to come up with a good adjective that captures how out of the box some of these people are. But there's a distinct deja vu quality to the Hegseth nomination because he has a lot of personal baggage, including an allegation of sexual assault stemming from a extramarital encounter nearly 8 years ago. So there's some similarity to the Brett Kavanaugh nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court that Collins played such a key role in. Now, Hegseth denies the allegations against him, but there's been a financial settlement with the woman. The police report has been made public, and now, reportedly, the alleged victim has been attempting to meet with senators to give her side of the story. The New Yorker this week reported that Collins was one of those senators, but that she denied an invitation via an intermediary to meet with the woman. Collins has sort of challenged this. She's trying to make this distinction between this unnamed third party approaching her and the woman or her attorney. In fact, there was a back and forth on social media between Collins and the New Yorker, but the magazine, which is renowned for its rigorous fact-checking standards, isn't backing down. And Collins is also saying these allegations shouldn't come to individual senators, but the Armed Services Committee, which is vetting Hegseth's nomination. I asked her office this week why she thinks that's appropriate, and the answer I got was basically that the committee has more resources to investigate such claims, do background checks, etc. But as you can imagine, Nicole, that's not really flying with Collins's critics.
Yeah, and Steve, you know, you mentioned a lot has been made about how Collins might vote on Trump's nominees, but I'm curious when it comes to Hegseth's confirmation prospects here. I mean, do you think her vote is going to make much of a difference this time based on what we're seeing out of Washington?
Yeah, honestly, it might not, Nicole, because there's been a lot of reporting illustrating how Trump and MAGA world have made Hegseth this sort of loyalty test for Republican senators. And the message is basically confirm this guy or reap the whirlwind, face primary challenges, or get dogpiled on Elon Musk's social media platform. You know, the latter has arguably worked in the case of Senator Joni Ernst. She was a sexual assault survivor who expressed early reservations about Hegseth, but then MAGA unleashed its pressure campaign, and now she's saying she's going to vote for him. So if all these Republicans fall in line, then Collins' vote won't matter all that much, at least in determining the outcome.
We'll pivot again to something a bit closer to home here. You know, the long-running debate over proposed changes in lobster catch limits, I mean, seems to have reached a bit of a boiling point late last week here in Maine. I mean, this has been controversial from the start. It's already been delayed once. Now, it seems after a heated meeting with lobstermen, the State Department of Marine Resources is going to try to drop this proposal. Steve, it's really a fine line that the Marine Resources Commissioner has to walk here, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a tough gig, Nicole, because Patrick Kelleher is supposed to be regulating the lobster fishery, but the industry is generally hostile to regulations, and it has the ability to run people out of the commissioner's job if they make the politics untenable. And they have. That's how Kelleher got the job 14 years ago. His predecessor became a pariah among the industry, and he lost support from the governor who nominated him, Governor Paul LePage. So he resigned, and that's how Kelleher won the job. So that's sort of the political backdrop to Kelleher's announcement last week. He was rescinding this rule that would have increased the size of catchable lobsters by 1/16 of an inch. But in making that announcement, he basically told a group of lobstermen that he thought it was a bad move for the sustainability of the fishery. And this is the exchange that ensued.
Listen, listen to do we have to listen to you? You sold out to Noah in Canada. Why do we have to listen to you?
You like sold
out. Oh, that's nice. That's nice. Foul language in a meeting. Good for you. That's our commissioner. Good job.
Listen to me.
I don't have to listen to you. Nobody here has to listen to you.
Then leave.
So that clip has made the rounds and generated a lot of attention, probably because it's objectively hilarious to hear lobstermen complain about profanity. But the bottom line is that Kelleher was giving the lobstermen what they wanted. He just made the mistake of expressing why he thought doing so wasn't good for the fishery.
We should probably say here, Steve, I mean, this issue is not resolved at this point, right?
Yeah, that's right. So in exchange for basically scuttling this rule, Kelleher has to now come up with an alternative sustainability plan that will fly with the feds. And I'm not entirely sure what that will be, but once again, he'll still have to walk this fine line that you mentioned earlier, Nicole.
And Steve, Kevin, any reaction to this tension in the State House this week?
So Kelleher's announcement was definitely welcomed by the lobster industry, and including by some of folks who at the State House, Representative Billy Bob Falkingham, who's the Republican leader in the House. He's a lobsterman from Winter Harbor, and he was pretty much thrilled to hear about the change. And he just kind of chuckled when, you know, the issue of Kelleher's language came up.
You know, the interesting thing, too, I think the governor was asked about Kelleher's profane retort during her budget briefing last week. And it was kind of funny. She didn't say much, but she sort of looked at the reporter who asked the question, smiled, and made this gesture signaling a slap on the wrist. And so, you know, I think Kelleher is safe for now, but we'll see what happens in the future.
That was Maine Public's chief political correspondent Steve Missler and State House correspondent Kevin Miller. Thanks for joining us for Maine's Political Pulse. You can also read the Political Pulse newsletter. You can find it online at mainepublic.org/pulse. Our music is by Rob Holt. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon on Maine's Political Pulse.